On this episode of the Autumn Windbags, we ask which Raiders need to step up the most against the Bengals on Saturday. We look at the good, the bad, and the ugly from the Raiders' win over the Chargers. We look at the 2022-2023 opponent schedule, which has now been released. And we do the age-old question, why does the media now all of a sudden love Derek Carr? And we love when you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares. The Raiders!
Caught! Touchdown! Raiders!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto. Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. RJ Clifford, Juan Soto, let's have some fun today. Playoff week.
Feels good.
In the playoffs, playoff week. Normally when I'm talking about playoff week, it's like, all right, where am I going to go to watch the games? Like,
yeah,
the Raiders have been out of the playoffs for 2 months, you know, mathematically eliminated by Halloween. It's like, all right, I'm just going to watch some football and just kind of, you know, hope the AFC West loses. Now it's playoff week with the Raiders. It is a special feeling. I'm literally just billionaire strutting everywhere. It feels great.
Don't you want to win? Get a taste. See what it tastes like. Yeah.
See what that win tastes like.
I'm excited. Like, I don't know that people can appreciate this. There have been quite a few wild card teams to make it to the Super Bowl. Like, it's not.
Yeah.
It's not like out of the realm of possibility that we make a run here and we're in the Super Bowl. Like, it happens. And once you're in the game, you never know what's going to happen in the game, man. Just one game, someone doesn't show up, injury, whatever. You're in the show now. Once you're in the show, now comes a different level. And we'll get into this a little bit later. But that's why it's so big to make it to the playoffs.
Yeah. And that's the other part is like this AFC, like there's not really anyone that like deathly scares me. Like obviously, you know, obviously the Chiefs packed our lunches twice this season, right? That's obvious.
Packed
but like
more than that.
But like the Titans don't scare me. The Bills don't scare me. The Bengals don't scare me. We already beat the Steelers. It's like there's no daunting figure in the AFC that I'm like, all right, we're going to be underdogs to just about everybody we play, right? Like obviously everyone above, like, you know, the four seeds above us, we're going to be betting underdogs. We're 5.5-point underdogs to the Bengals. I still feel confident. The more and more I look at that matchup, the more confident I get about it. It's like, this is a wide open AFC. Like there's, and all the really good teams have shit the bed against really bad teams this season. There's no, you know, 14-3 team. There's no team that just destroyed everybody. Like, right. It's like the Titans number one seed. I'm not afraid of the Titans. Like they don't Ryan Tannehill, like, their defense, it's like, yeah, they're going to probably run their ball, you know, run the ball up our ass. And there's a lot of things they can do, but it's like, I don't fear anybody in the AFC.
You know, when there were 16 games, the big talk was you have to have your seasons in quarters. Mm-hmm. How do you play the first, second, third, and fourth four games? And if you take a look at our last four games, maybe we don't pop out offensively or, you know, we don't have eye-popping stats, but we're finding ways to make these games ugly. We're finding ways to make force teams to play our game, to force teams into our style of game. We're keeping it close, and I don't know that anyone's playing any better as far as muddying the play, making the play a little bit. We're not a comfortable team to play anymore.
It's like dirty boxing.
You're not going to be able to like when Couture fought Belfort, like he just pushed him up against the fence and he just tugged on his head and just made him uncomfortable the entire fight. Yeah. And it's like, that's what we do. Like, we're going to make you uncomfortable. You're going to get some plays. We're going to get some plays back and forth, but it's like, you're never going to really be able to run your offense the way you want to run it. You're going to have to do like Justin Herbert and get a ton of fourth down conversions because we're stopping you on on third downs. And, you know, didn't let the Colts really run the ball the way they wanted to. Didn't let the Broncos run the ball the way they wanted to. Definitely not. Didn't let the Browns run the ball. These are all teams that have specific things they want to do. And believe it or not, despite Joe Burrow and his freakish passing yards this last month or so. They do want to get the ball to Joe Mixon a lot. And, you know, these are things that we can do. And this is the things that we have done. And it's not just like one game. Okay, well, we did it to the Browns. But then,
no
you
team
know,
wants to throw the ball 64 out. Times.
Exactly. That's mm-hmm. not in the game plan. No matter if you have a Justin Herbert or not, we're forcing these teams to play one way or the other. And it's not comfortable for them because it's not what they would rather they would prefer to do. And when they do that, then they fall into our hands. So hopefully Mr. Burrow, Mr. Jackpot Joey, tries to be the Jackpot Joey and he ends up busting out.
Like, comment, subscribe to the Autumn Windbags of the Las Vegas Raiders. A lot of good stuff obviously happening. We want to make sure you're around to do that with us. Question of the day. This question, we'll pin it in the comment section. Very curious what you guys think. We'll have you guys answer it. We'll read some of them as the show goes on and also next show. Which Raiders players do we need to step up the most against the Bengals Saturday? This is our question of the day. We'll pin it in the comment section. Which players need to step up the most? I'll go first. Okay. Now, when I think step up, I think like guys that haven't that need to. Guys that need to up their game, right? Because the obvious answers are like, you know, Max Crosby. It's like, well, he doesn't need to step. Max needs to be Max. He's not like running around in third gear when he didn't get into fifth. He's been in fifth gear, you know, the last half
every
of
play,
this season, right?
Every single play doing, of the right? year.
I'm going to go Yannick Ngakoue.
Okay, that's a good one.
That O-line of the Bengals, trash. They're the kitty cats of the Bengals, right? Terrible. Max is going to eat, and we need Yannick to do the same. Joe Burrow is the most sacked quarterback in the NFL. There's a reason for that. One, it's because he wants to sit back there, do 5 and 7 step drops, throw it 50 yards to Ja'Marr Chase, right? Yannick Ngakoue, and BD Williams did a really good job explaining this when he came on our show a couple weeks ago. He's got a lot of sacks. He's got like 10 sacks this season, but he has less than like 30 tackles. He's just like a low motor guy, low energy guy. It's like, all right, when the opportunity arises, he'll take advantage and get his sack. But he's not a dude that's going to like cut back the other way of the field and like chase down a running back, right? Hopefully, with it being the playoffs, with it being such a big deal, with him playing a crappy O-line, the light goes off in Ngakoue's head and he's just like, all right, I'm going to ball out today. We need Yannick Ngakoue to go bonkers on Saturday.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I've once we had BD on, I started really focusing on Ngakoue's play. Mm-hmm. I've always done it like tape study, but I've been like watching a game speed. And yeah, man, like if when he beats the tackle cleanly, there's effort. When he gets blocked right away, he kind of just sits there and floats around.
Yeah.
And
that's
a good one.
I'll get you next time.
I'll get the next one.
Yeah. He's like, I'm going to wait until this tackle brain farts and then I'm going to go get my sack, as opposed to like, right. I'm going to make this tackle fuck up and I'm going to go get that sack no matter who's on me.
Yeah. I mean, for mine is is our offensive line. Not only do we need them to block the way they did, I mean, against it's a very porous Chargers run defense that we ran on, which is still, we still had to do it.
Yeah.
But we need that same blocking early in the game. We need to be a balanced attack. The first time around, we weren't that balanced early in the game, and we scored 6 points in the first half. Yeah. So we need to make sure that we're a little bit more balanced. Derek Carr has shown that he's a much better distributor of the ball when he picks and chooses his moments to throw the ball, as opposed to having to throw the ball every play almost. Mm-hmm. He's shown he's more effective. Although he's not having the stats, he's also not making the mistakes. He's more effective. And also we need to make sure that, you know, Derek Carr stays upright. He had a, just like we strip sacked Joe Burrow on the second play on our second to last series. In the game, the Bengals strip sacked Carr, mm-hmm. and they ended up getting a field goal out of that. So it really comes down to, are we going to be able to run the ball and are we going to be able to protect Carr? If we can do that, it's going to be a much different game than last time. Last time was more of a defensive struggle until late. If our offensive line shows up the way they have this last month or so, it's going to be a lot different game.
I also need Darren Waller to go off. He had a really good game the first time we played. What were his numbers? He had a really, really good game. 7 receptions, 116 yards when they played the first time. And the Bengals are just bad against tight ends. Like they consistently give up a lot of receptions, a lot of yards, a lot of touchdowns to tight ends. On paper, he's the best player on our offense. Darren Waller, right? He's been hurt. How healthy
is he? He's one of the best players on the field on paper.
On paper, he should be pretty much undefendable, right? He really should be. Again, we don't know how injured he is, that back, that knee, anything with COVID, whatever. I don't know, right? But he was clearly out of sync with Derek Carr last week. Another week of full practice. He has been limited in practice. Hopefully, he's still getting at least the right kind of reps to get back in sync with Derek Carr and his blocking. I mean, we're going to need his blocking to be good, too, to get Josh Jacobs to loosen up a little bit. Darren Waller is poised. Everything is in position for Darren Waller to take off. Now he needs to execute that in his very first playoff game. Like, all right, remind us why you were our Pro Bowler last season. Remind us why you're a top three tight end. Because, you know, all the injuries and lackluster season, you know, this is where you turn the narrative. Like Darren Waller has been wanting a big contract. He's been wanting an extension. He wants to change up that contract, which he absolutely deserves to, right? Like we got to steal. This is where you prove it Saturday and in the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I was saying about Derek Carr, and you got mad at me. I mean, the playoffs is a different level now. Like you don't want to be known if you're a player, you don't want to be known as like the Andy Dalton of your position. Gets to the playoffs, yeah, but never does anything when they're there. Like you want to show out when it's the lights are brightest. I'm gonna get to this in the good, the bad, and the ugly. But it wasn't like Darren Waller wasn't getting opportunities to make plays this last game. So this game, he's gonna be fed the ball, despite the fact that he hasn't played in a month and a half, and presumably DC hasn't really thrown to Carr all that much because he's, you know, because the nature of his injury, he still fed him like 9 targets. So it wasn't like he wasn't throwing him the ball. Yeah. It's just going to be that the timing and stuff like that, getting that chemistry back. So
well, I had a couple of bad drops too.
Yeah. He had a couple,
you know, he can really tell, you can tell he's been cold, man. He's got to get back into his flow. Yeah. I'm obviously, like, narratives surrounding playoffs are different, right? Like, who's going to be who's a great big game quarterback? Who's a playoff tight end? That's fun for, like, what we're doing and, like, media-driven stuff. If I was a GM, I wouldn't buy it. I don't feel like being a playoff guy is a way to, like, completely delineate how you are. Like, I'd rather look at, like, the entire body of work than be like, oh, I'm going to make or break who I am in the playoffs. You'll make or break who you are in the fans' eyes. Make or break who you are with sponsorships and storylines. Like, absolutely. Like, that's going to, when more eyes are on you, what you do matters more. But if I'm a GM, I'm not going to look at like, well, he sucked all season, but boy, did he show up in the playoffs. It's like, no, that whole body of work is what matters. And this is just the random time you happen to execute.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's the big games, the playoffs, those are like the icing on the cake, right? You have to have the cake first. Unlike what, like the Raiders signing, what's his name, Larry Brown, who was not a very good corner, but had 2 pick sixes in the Super Bowl, and Al Davis gives him the biggest contract for a corner. It's like, no, look at who he is, but also how do you separate good players from the game changing players? So, because in the playoffs, it's like you know who the good players are on the other team, the game changers. Doesn't matter. You can game plan against me. You can do X, Y, and Z against me. I'm still going to get mine. I'm still going to help my team win. And that's what I'm talking about. So there's a difference between this guy can help our team win games and this guy can help our team win championships. And that's the difference is these guys are they play their best when it's absolutely needed. And in the playoffs, it's bigger than a regular season game. But again,
all that means in the playoffs is like, how do you play against good opposition? Right, like you're not playing shitty teams anymore, right? You're in the playoffs. Like, that's what it is. Like, do you play against good opposition in the playoffs and in the regular season, or are you just one of those like stat patterns where it's like, all right, I got the Jaguars, I'm going to get my 150 yards. You know,
that's one of the knocks on Max is he eats up inferior tackles when he gets into goes against, you know, better opposition.
Was it last season he had 5 sacks against the Bengals? Was that last season?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think
it was last season or 2 seasons ago. He had like 5 sacks against the Bengals. And just like, yeah, oh, wow, like look at this crazy sacks. He's like, he just ate up one team.
It's one guy, you know? And so that's what I'm talking about. Like, they're going to find ways to, like the same thing we did against Joey Bosa, to kind of nullify Joey Bosa after the first game of what he did. That's what they're going to do against Max. Now, to our, you know, benefit, we do have someone on the other side who can beat tackles cleanly. But this is like the extra gear you have to have. Even if they're doing things specifically against you, you still have to make plays. There's no excuses here. It's just production.
We are 2-1 in rematches this season. FYI, right? Obviously, we play 3 teams twice, 2-1 in rematches. All right. So that's a look. All right. That's our question of the day. Which Raiders need to step up the most on Saturday? Leave it in the comment section. We'll pin the comment for you. But now, you know what time it is. The good, the bad, and the ugly. I am still at half mast after Sunday night's game. Raiders 35, Chargers 32 in overtime. A lot of things to like, and clearly some things that we got to work on, letting 6 of 7 fourth down conversions on Justin Herbert and company. Still got the W. Fourth straight win. Fourth overtime win. I think it's the 6th time it's been a walk-off score.
Yeah, 6 walk-off scores
this season. Yeah. 6. One. You keep that game tight, we'll go to the finish line.
And like I said before, you keep that shit tight, like, you know, the Raiders aren't going to go away. Like, you're not going to be able to push them around anymore because they've just been through too much and they keep fighting back. So yeah, you have to like blow us out to really keep us out of the game. All right. We're going to start with the good like we always do. The first good, Josh Jacobs, 26 carries, 131 yards and a touchdown, a little over five yards a carry. Great job. The absolute perfect time for him to have his best game of the season. We needed him. We needed to control the clock, which we did. We had 7 more minutes of time of possession, 38 to 31 minutes. Ish around there and change. And he was able to get big chunk yardage. He was being a little shifty, but he was being decisive, if that makes sense. He was making one little cut, but then he was going. He wasn't like, you know, he did it like I think the second run of the game where he was running, you know, east and west. He didn't really run east and west in this game. He made a cut, but then he was north and south. So great job, Josh Jacobs. Even with the hurt ribs, he went out. And like he said, he's the closer. That's what you brought me here for. You need to run down the clock. You need to eat up time. You need to eat up yardage. Give me the ball. And that's exactly what he did.
And it wasn't like the offensive line. Like, the offensive line has improved, right? We've talked about it multiple times. A young offensive line that's been basic, more or less, been playing together, like the entire unit, right? There's been very few injuries after the big injuries, right? So they're finally like starting to find their stroke. They've improved, but it's not like they balled out in the run in run blocking. Well, there's some stat where like 130 of Jacobs' 131 yards came like after contact. Like, he was bouncing off defenders all game long, and he was able to break free a couple times. But it was with busted ribs.
Yeah,
spot like ran with just anger.
Now, the reason why I did put the offensive line in the good. Mm-hmm. Is for 2 reasons. Carr wasn't running for his life in this game, right? Part of that was because of the running game, but and also the offensive line is blocking better. Now, I didn't recall anybody having clean hits or too many clean hits on Jacobs, especially behind the line of scrimmage. That was an issue that he's had earlier in the year where he just has no shot at getting yardage. We were at least sticking with our blocks and finishing our blocks a little bit better. So even if a guy gets an arm on him, you're not going to arm tackle Josh Jacobs. So offensive line played better, and I'm trying to be encouraging.
You got arms like me.
Oh, yeah? You need some pipes cleaned. Go ahead and give me those when you're done with them.
Right there. Yeah. Well, how about this? Leatherwood didn't give up one sack, only gave up one pressure. I don't think there's a single penalty on Brandon Parker. The single penalty in Alex Leatherwood. So it's like, all right, how about we give you like some participation points, right? Like normally you're what's holding us back. And maybe you didn't play lights out, right? Maybe, you know, no one's going to be electing you guys to the Pro Bowl. But improvement at the right time, that counts for something.
You know, we don't have to have every single player on our team be perfect. We would love it, but these guys, you know, the defense, the opposing defense, they get paid too, right? We just want to see improvement. We want to see you win more often than not. At least get stalemates. And if you get stalemates, Josh Jacobs is going to be able to find a way to get yardage. Next on the good is our good friend of the program, my friend and yours, Hunter Renfrow. He got only 4 catches for 13 yards, but 2 touchdowns. And those 2 touchdowns, he was, I mean, NFL wide open for running a short route.
He was breaking ankles.
Yeah, he was wide open. That's NFL wide open. If you didn't know, Denzel Perryman back, 9 tackles, 8 solo.
Did not miss a beat. Just doing what he does.
Just what he does, man. He's the hammer. Faison, 7 tackles, all tackles solo, which tells me those are all tackles either out wide on wide receivers on short passes, or coming up in run defense. He has 1 tackle for loss and 2 passes defense. Man, what's going on here? I'm freaking burping like crazy. So, Brandon Faison, you're on the good. Nate Hobbs back in the good. 7 tackles, 5 solo, got a tackle for loss, a big tackle for loss on a big third down play, and a pass defense. So, great job, Nate Hobbs. Our good friend.
How about also just random the good? After a giant win like that, everyone's jacked up. It's a night game. Everyone, I feel like, on the Raiders went home.
Just go home, dude.
They didn't open a bottle, didn't get behind the wheel. Everyone just went home. Let's count that as a win for once, huh?
Well, you know, I think it's more of a thing that, like, just what Carr said, we're not done yet. I think everyone feels that way. Like, okay, now that we're actually there, okay, now I got to stay home because I ain't trying to catch COVID. I ain't trying to catch a case. I'm not trying to catch a body.
I think they're also just fucking exhausted. From playing 5 quarters of football.
It is exhausting.
Running all over the place. Over 30 points scored for both. Like, in the trenches, it was a grind. DBs and receivers were sprinting everywhere. Like, that fourth quarter was a track meet. It was a track meet for 20 minutes. Fourth and long.
That's a lot of plays, man.
Exhausted. They didn't have any time to go party. They were, like, too zapped to party. Like, they literally went home, and they're just like, hey, baby, I'm just going to lay here. You do what you want to me. But, like, daddy isn't delivering tonight. I'll see you in the morning.
Yeah, just don't judge me on my performance tonight. After the game.
And I'm not at my best. I apologize.
Yeah, just shower and just go get home. I just want to get home. Like, just get me in my bed.
Ice, Tylenol.
Yeah, right. Max, 6 tackles, all solo tackles, 3 tackles for loss. 2 sacks and 3 passes defensed. What else can you say, man? He's a disruptor, and he's when you talk about game changing players, that's a game changing stat line. Tackles for loss, so he's tackling the running back behind the line of scrimmage. So he's ruining and he's disrupting your run game. Now, it's foolish to think that those are the only times he gets into the backfield again in the run game, right? He's affecting the running game as well, even if he's not making tackles. He had 2 sacks and 3 pass defense. One of them was when he knocked the ball, basically, as Herbert was throwing it, and he ended up still being able to throw the ball, but it just, you know, it was a kind of weird play where Herbert got his arm hit, and then he continued the throw, but then he thought it was a fumble, so he picked it up, and he was able to run another, like, 15 yards or so. But it was an incomplete forward pass. But he was just a disruptive player that day.
That's also the beauty of Max Crosby is his flexibility. Like, against Justin Herbert, like, obviously, like, the fourth quarter and overtime wasn't that way, but Justin Herbert's a dink and dunk guy. Like, that's what the Chargers want to do. Ball control, West Coast offense, 3-yard pass, 5-yard pass, throw to him in strides. Like, he's just, like, really quick passes. It makes it really hard to get home. Mm-hmm. 3 passes defended means, okay, I'm going to change. Maybe I'm not going to get home and cause a disruption as much. So I'm just get my hands up. Let me just get in front of Herbert, get the hands up and bat some passes down. Like, that's the other part that Max Crosby is adding to. You know, before he was just a pass rusher. Now his run defense is getting better. His pass rush is more diversified now, not just getting pressures, not just getting sacks, but based on how the quarterback is and how the offense is drawn up, he'll adjust his pass rush, right? Mm-hmm, Saturday, mm-hmm. with Burrow just doing 5 and 7 step drops trying to make 50-yard bombs, he's just going for pressure, right? He's just going for sacks, right? You're not going to bat down, you know, Burrow just leaning back and hucking 40 yarders, right? But against Justin Herbert and the Chargers, let me get in the path of those passes, right? Because they're going to be low and they're going to be fast. He's just getting better every game, it seems like.
His football IQ is just starting to grow because he's almost like a Fedor Emelianenko. Like, you can see him changing up his game plan mid fight.
Yeah,
maybe even if his game plan is working, but something else would work better from what he's seeing. Just a very smart, intellectual approach to play. And Max, you know, he was getting chipped and he was getting pushed around. So what did he do? He lined up at D tackle and he's doing stunts and trying to find ways to get himself a quick, clean release against one player as opposed to taking on two or three.
Omar chiming in. I feel bad for Waller. Seeing him press the man is in pain mentally and socially. Derek Carr needs to invite him to his home, go to church, and find him a soulmate. I mean, if by soulmate you women, mean a chick, weak, I don't think Darren Waller.
Women, yeah. Weak in legs.
Is there anyone on the Raiders roster who has less of an issue getting laid than Darren
He's
Waller?
He's a handsome man, dude.
The wife I don't think so. Loves him. The wife
he is a good looking man.
Darren Waller. He's a good looking man. I'll freely admit it. If I had to list every single player on the Raiders roster in order from the least likely I want to be around my girl to the most likely, I'd probably put Darren Waller 1. You know who should be number 2? Denzel Perryman. He's funny, great personality, yoked up. He's an engaging dude. His presser, he's the best presser of any Raider player. And it's not even like he's saying anything like he's doing stand-up or doing a one-man show. He's just like just an engaging, interesting guy. Just like gives you the shit. Mm-hmm. And he's like, and he also gives you the like, not intentionally, but like my time is super valuable and I'll just give you like my 5 minutes and then I'm out of here, but not in a dickish kind of way. You know, chicks love that. You know, chicks love the idea that this dude's too good for him. And so they want to like break him and harness him, you know? Mm-hmm. 1, Darren Waller. 2, Denzel Perryman. Do not let your girls near those men.
Colton Miller is a sleeper. Big cuddly teddy bear, big blue eyes. Mm-hmm. Don't go searching them right now. You're going to be like, oh, let me see. What are you typing, JR? Let's see.
No. I never thought of him that way. But maybe you've turned how I felt about him around a little bit, maybe. Let's see.
All right. Our defense on Austin Ekeler. Now, the stat line is going to look like, oh, well, he still did really well. Mm-hmm. Trust me. This is not the way the Chargers wanted this game to go. He got 21 touches for 99 yards and 2 touchdowns. They wanted to get him the ball a whole lot more. He only had 16 carries. Now he's not a big carry guy, but basically the entire fourth quarter and overtime, they threw the ball. And that's not their game. Their game runs through it as good as Justin Herbert is. Their game runs through Austin Ekeler. They wanted him to get the ball a whole lot more. And the fact that we were able to kind of not really let him get those big plays, it's a good job on Ekeler. If we can hold Joe Mixon to 100 yards total offense, that would be good for us this week.
You know who I do want around my girl, though? Hunter Renfrow. He just seems like a good quality guy. You know what I mean? Like he wouldn't stab you behind the back. You know, like if she needed help carrying the groceries into the house, like he'd be the first one there. Like that's definitely a dude. That, like our buddy Mike Trevino, like when I'm out of town, he sometimes comes over and hangs out with my wife because he's like one of my best friends. And it's like he just like likes to do that. I would put Hunter Renfrow in that category. Like in Pulp Fiction, when they said like John Travolta had to take her out for dinner.
He's
like
taking your buddy
to, like,
out.
Take her out.
Take your buddy's wife.
Like I would pick Hunter Renfrow. Hunter Renfrow would be the guy.
I would pick Hunter Renfrow
to take my wife out if I'm out of town.
I think Trevino pipes, bro. He's a good dude. He's funny. He's smart.
You never would.
He plays instruments. Like, he has pet birds. Like, dude, this guy's got it all. What do you want? Got long hair and ponytail. He can cook. Trevino's the man, dude.
Pet bird is, I think, the deal breaker.
Yeah, right.
Pet bird. That's like that's worse than a dude with cats. And he has cats, too.
I have cats. What the fuck's wrong with that?
That's okay. Why I let you around my girl, too.
DC on his last drive. He wasn't great the entire game, but that last drive, this one play specifically, first play of the drive, Jacobs gets 7 yards. The next play is a swing pass to Richard, and he loses 5 yards. So we're like 3rd and 8, and this is a big play now because it's towards the end of the game. We need to, you know, keep pushing the ball, keep scoring the ball. Like, it's towards the end of the game. We need to score here. It's tied. Like, this is big time. If we kick the ball off, Herbert's been moving the ball down the field. Or we have to punt it away, excuse me. He threw one of the most impressive passes I've seen Derek Carr throw from the opposite hash, beyond the opposite hash. He throws across the field into a small little window to Zay Jones, completes it for 11 yards, flips the field. We're now in the opponent's territory. And a couple runs later, we kick a field goal. So big time play in a big time situation, a big time throw. Those are the types of things that Derek Carr needs to do. He needs to save it for the big time. It can't just be flinging the ball around the field. That's why, like you said, we need to have a more balanced attack. We need to have everyone show up. They may not play their best game, but everyone show up and help out. And having Jacobs take a lot of that load early in the game was able to allow Carr to shine late.
Yeah, Derek Carr, we don't need you to play to carry the team for 5 quarters. We just need you to carry the team for these specific spots. Josh Jacobs, we don't need you to carry the team for all 5 quarters in overtime. Just these spots, right? Defense, we don't need you to get interception or stop every, you know, just we need you to come up big here. That's what this team's finally doing, is people are picking up the slack in certain spots when necessary, as opposed to just like, well, if DC throws 300, we win. If he doesn't, we lose. It's like, no, we can find multiple ways to win now, which wasn't the case the first half of the season.
Well, yeah.
That was a great example. Statistically, Carr didn't have a great, like, statistically, the game wasn't great, but when we needed him to be clutch, he delivered.
Well, the main thing is, like, when you're looking at one player having such a big swing, whether a team wins or loses, you just game plan around that one player. Look at the Giants did. The Giants basically made it very difficult by disguising a lot of their coverages and confused Derek Carr because he's not great. Post-snap, if he's confused, he just kept checking down. And they totally just confused him, man. Now, if you have a run game, you can't do that, because now we're dictating what we do against you as opposed to you dictating what we see. So that's why it's much more important. Our last
Which Raider player I think pulls the most ass, but probably a lower average quality? Foster Moreau.
Yeah,
I could see him just like hitting the dive bar and just like taking two home. He's like, all right, well, 2 fives equal a 10. That counts. You know what I mean? I feel like Waller is more specific. Perryman's a little bit more specific. They have like a standard. They're still doing fine. But I can see Foster Moreau just being like, drunk, you're with me. Okay.
I see Foster. Honestly, I look at Foster Moreau and I'm like, this guy went to LSU, man. He's seen some shit. He's seen some shit.
Yeah, he was at a party.
Yeah. Right? I'm thinking he's like a poor man's Gronkowski.
Yeah, like LSU is like to parting what Arizona State is. Like, Arizona State's like the party school, right?
Well, Arizona. You went to Arizona.
You went Arizona? Yeah. Also a party school?
Also
and party so he's school. Just like, yeah.
Just
like,
the whole goddamn like, state of Arizona.
It really is, dude. It's a great state to party in, no doubt about it. All right, last good.
Last good. Daniel Carlson, goddamn. 5 for 5 field goals, 2 for 2 extra points. Game winning 46-yard field goal. And I was cheering before he even kicked the ball because I knew 100% he was going to make that shit. There was no – he walked out there and he was like – he just got out of bed. It's like our friend Brian, when we used to watch old Pride fights, we used to be like, oh, like Mario Sperry. He looked like he was just like – just got out of bed. He just sat like this, ready to fight. He just kind of combed his hair to the side, like, all right, I'm ready. Like, just so calm. Like, I've been through this a million times before. And that's Daniel Carlson, man. He's been through it a million times before.
The higher the pressure, the better he kicks. It's insane. Yeah, you know the last time he missed a kick? Do you remember the last time he missed a kick?
I don't. He missed two in the same game. He missed an extra point and a field goal in the same game. I think that was the game, right?
No, it was before that. November 7th at the Giants. It's the last time he missed a kick.
He missed two that game, didn't he? Or just one?
Did he? Was it that one? I know he definitely missed a field goal.
I think he missed a field goal and an extra point that game. That's why it was weird. He missed two kicks in one game.
Whether he missed one or two, that's the last time he's missed any kick. November 7th. That was 9 games ago. The last time he missed a kick.
And he's ain't batted kicking 1,000
for 9 weeks. Yeah.
For 45 plus.
These are his longs. 50 plus. Since that Giants game, these are his longs. 47, yeah. 56, 52, 26, 48, 41, 47, 52.
Yeah. He's
averaging like 46 yards on his longs.
Definitely long dicking it for sure. All right, that's the good. Here comes the bad. Derek Carr, Darren Waller chemistry. It just wasn't there. Partially, you know, there was one really, really egregious drop by Waller. Another one was a catchable ball, but it was a tough catch. But let's say he caught those. It's still 4 out of 9 targets. He only had 2 catches and 9 targets. Now, he's such a special player. You're going to want to get him the ball because he can make things happen. After the catch, it's just, I don't think the chemistry was there. Like, to get those kind of cobwebs out of the way, maybe do a little extra throwing on the side.
It's like a point guard in basketball. Like, if they're a shooter and they miss 4 in a row, you got to shoot your way out of it, right?
Just keep shooting your way out of it.
Same thing with Darren Waller. It's not one game to make or break how we feel about Darren Waller, right? It's just, we know what you're capable of. As long as he's not drastically still injured and hobbled and they're just like trying to keep it quiet, maybe use him as a decoy. Maybe that's the case. Hopefully not. Maybe that's the case. That is, even then, you still got to toss him a couple just to make him look like a decoy. But even
yeah,
then,
you have to get Waller.
Give him 15 targets on Saturday. I'll be happy with that.
You have
to 15 get targets.
All right, next bad. Desmond Trufant. Now, although he did have 4 passes defense, I was watching the game film. He made several business decisions against Austin Eckler. Dude, I'm talking like this. He went like this, just like that. I'm like, dude, I missed him.
Oh, he's such a good running back. Oh no, I didn't get him. Oh,
that was
curses. I'm gonna lose sleep over that one. Boy, is my face red.
I was at work on my break watching some film, and I had to pull like one of my coworkers who doesn't even really know about football. I'm like, dude, look at this guy, number 10. Watch him. And he's like, is he even trying? I'm like, not really. Not on that play. So, yeah, man. If you get to the Joe Mixon, he's a little bit more explosive. Now, Austin Eckler is a good back. He's a strong, powerful back. Joe Mixon is hands down. He's more explosive runner. If you do that, he can make you pay. He can make you pay and make it hurt. Our defensive red zone efficiency against the Chargers were 4 for 4 in the red zone. That's not good at all. Go ahead.
Well, I was gonna say their offense naturally translate to good red zone offense. Dink and dunk, timing, short, quick passes, heart route, bam, bam, bam. It just works great when you only have, 30 yards to deal with, right? At opposite of ours. We're like, we want to go deep choice route, stuff like that. They just have a great offense for red zone, and it paid off. Sure. It worked against us for sure.
Well, they have a guy like Eckler in the backfield who's just as or even more dangerous catching the ball than he is running the ball. And he's not like a scat back where he can't run the ball. He can run the ball outside. He can run the ball inside. So he can do it all from back there. So he's a really good red zone target as well. Our fourth down defense, man. Just in the fourth quarter alone, fourth quarter and overtime alone, Chargers were 3 for 3. One of them was, and it also gave up another first down on a penalty, a face-in penalty. But man, it's that game should have been over 4 times.
It's a weird bad good stat because we got them to fourth down so many times. Like there's multiple series where he'd go 0-for-3 on first down, second down, third down, incomplete, fourth and 12, 15 yards, first down. And then again, start over, incomplete, penalty, fourth and 15, 22 yarder. You're like, God damn it. Like, there was genuinely 7 or 8 fourth downs that if we would have stopped it, the game was over. Like, the game was over. They had no chance. They had no chance to recover on, like, literally like 6, 7, or 8 fourth downs. And they got all of them.
Yeah, it wasn't like they were gaining small chunks of yardage every play and made it like 4th and 1 or 4th and 2. Like, these were 4th and 8, 4th and 9s, 4th and 20s, like, they were like long fourth downs. So that needs to get cleaned up. We need to make sure we get that cleaned up. Now, there was good, there was bad, and there was also ugly.
And there was Soto. Oh, ugly. Yeah.
Yes. So Brandon Staley, the head coach of the Chargers. We're
media darling.
Media darling, genius. Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. After the throw that I chronicled here about Derek Carr's throw. We didn't throw the ball after that. We just ran the ball a few times, right? And, you know, they didn't call timeouts. It was under a minute. You know, they didn't call timeouts. We didn't call timeouts. So we're just like, it's like when you hit somebody with your car and it's like neither one of you have insurance. You're just like, you want to just take off? Like, what do you want to do? So it's like they're just looking at each other like, well, I mean, we could just both.
It's like when you run into your priest at the strip club. Like, neither one of you are supposed to be there, but one of you is not supposed to be there more.
Yeah, right. You know what I mean? So you're just like,
you know, so you're just kind of like, I got you, but I don't want this to get out. Like, I've got one over you, but you got half a one over me, type of thing.
So we all know he called timeout, and the excuse that he gave is he wanted to put a better run stop package in. He wanted to put more run stoppers into the game because he knew we were going to run the ball. And then Josh Jacobs proceeded to gain 10 yards the next run. Yeah. So that didn't work out too great. It just was not a smart play by him. I don't understand it. I don't think really anyone understands it. That is a decision that can change a narrative on your decision making moving forward. I don't think he's going to have quite the autonomy to just go for it on fourth down from his own, you know, 18 or whatever yard line or 28 yard line. Like, I don't think that's going to happen too much going forward. I think that there's been so many questionable decisions that he's made. There's a reason why no one else in the NFL is making these decisions. There's a reason why.
Yeah.
Just like kind of like you and I talk about some of the Raiders draft picks. There's a reason why no one else is looking at this player in this round. There's a reason for that. Same thing. There's a reason why these coaches aren't doing the same things that he's doing as Coach Staley's doing. So I see the rope being a little bit tighter on him for next year. Whether it's from a GM or the owner, or they just have conversations about it. But yeah, he's been giving a lot of latitude, and it's his first year and he's learning. But yeah, a lot of questionable decisions in that game.
Well, one thing on Staley, and then a couple more things on that timeout. He's bought himself a lot of equity in that. Like, the beautiful thing about being purely analytical is you can always just blame it on the analytics, right? You can always just say, like, that decision, oh, the math said to do that. I can just blame math, right? Even though,
but
like,
it has
I think
to
being
do
too
that,
far
though.
Analytical. Well, that's my point. Is like, you could say like the math says this, but the math doesn't take everything into consideration, right? Do you go for on 4th and 1? What if your center is injured? What if you haven't been running the ball well, right? Like there's a million other variables that don't take into that factor, right? And the other part was his holier than thou speech to the media when John Gruden got canned for the emails. Oh my God, that was my hearts and stars. I can't believe a man would say something like that. I am absolutely, absolutely just completely taken over by this terrible act by this beastly man. Oh my goodness, my sun and stars. I can't believe, like, that just bought the media. He was eating out of his hand at that point, right? They love just like holier than thou bullshit from coaches. And it was a no brainer for him. You get to like shit on a Raider, like on your rivals. And you make yourself look holier than thou, which is great, right? So he bought himself all this equity, which is great because I don't think he's a good coach. And I hope he stays with the Chargers as long as possible. How do you have Justin Herbert, all those playmakers on defense, and not make it to the playoffs?
He has a short leash.
The Chargers
for sure.
Are literally, we had this conversation. The Chargers are better than the Raiders at every position except for like two. And we beat them and went to the
tight
playoffs.
Tight end and kicker.
Yeah, like that's basically it.
Yeah, our kickers, our two kickers, and our tight ends probably.
Like, which, look, like, man, those rooms are the only, like, those rooms are the only ones better, and we still beat them. And I think the big thing is, like, our team unity is something that's very underrated when it comes to wins and losses, guys believing in each other, playing for each other. But coaching is a big chunk of that, too. It's a massive chunk of that. And
coaching is probably the most
rare that we can say, like, our coaching. We out-coached Brandon Staley, which was great.
Yeah.
And then back honestly, to that.
Go ahead.
And back to that timeout. At the time, I thought, all right, this is shady. He's screwing something up. This is nuts. But it was also mostly because, like, Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth were just, like, yelling in our ears at that time. And my heart was beating out of my chest because I just watched five quarters of football of, like, are the Raiders going to go to the playoffs for it? So I'm all loopy. The longer I think about it, the more, to me, the mistake came on the first down, not the third down when he called the timeout. Like, why do you not have your best run stoppers in there when you know for sure the Raiders are going to run? You know for sure they're going to run. They're either going to take a knee. They're not going to risk a pass. They know a tie sends them to the playoffs. There's nothing nefarious about playing for a tie in that situation. Mm-hmm. Like, they're just going to run the ball, and if they get in position, like, that's the most likely scenario, right? The Raiders are going to play super conservative running the ball. If they get first downs and get in field goal range, they'll kick it. If they won't, they'll punt it or run the clock out. And then we both go to the playoffs. Sorry, Ben Roethlisberger, you're retired and you stay home, right? And so he waits till the third down to bring in your run stoppers.
That's why I don't believe
it. And not only that, like, you gave the offense a chance to adjust. It's like, oh, you made a position change? Let's play around it. Because remember, originally, the Raiders were lined up in shotgun. In that first third down, they call a timeout. Then Carr was under center. And Jacobs made an amazing, a terribly blocked run play. And Jacobs got 10 yards anyway, got the first down. The rest is history. So to me, it's less like a nefarious third down timeout call to do something like outsmarting anything. I mean, he was just trying to play catch up from a bad personnel decision he made on first down.
Yeah, I mean, the time to get your running defense basically in the game was after that pass, because now they're on your side of the field. Now that they're there, can they get the yardage? Sure, they can get another 10, 15 yards, but if they don't, they just run the clock out. So if you stop them though and use your timeouts, you can get the ball back with 20, 25 seconds left. So the time to get your defensive run stoppers and to use your timeouts would have been right away on first.
Exactly. Omar chimes in. He thought he can stop us and have enough time to score.
Yeah,
I don't think so.
No,
I don't know because he would have called his timeouts on first and second down. Not wait. And remember, he didn't call timeout on first and second down. And in third down, he let like 20 seconds run off the clock and then called a timeout.
That could have
clearly
been the
wasn't
there.
Trying to save time.
Well, that could have been the mistake.
There's no
there.
Way. There's no way.
You can't
he's
say
like,
that.
All right, I'm going to stop the clock now. I can say that. There's no way they thought like, all right, they're going to punt, put us on like the 10 yard line, and we're going to drive 90 yards in 15 seconds.
He would have
called the timeout way
yards.
Earlier. Hey, well, if it is true, so
either way,
it is true,
it's a shitty decision.
It was either the dumbest coaching decision ever that you think, where he thought he can stop the clock and have time to score.
I got something.
Or
like
it was
talk.
Or it was, oh shit, I didn't call it. I didn't have the right personnel in downs one and two. Let me make that transition. No way. 0% chance. I can score in 10
one way or the other. However you slice it, it was a terrible decision. Whether that's what he wanted to do or not, he did not handle that well at all.
Yeah, that's the good, the bad, and the ugly. One thing I want to get to. This thing, it's obviously going to be a major topic
got
of conversation.
You so hard, got you so
for as
hard.
Long as Derek Carr is going to be our quarterback. Have you noticed the national media cannot stop shoving their tongue up Derek Carr's ass the last like 2 weeks?
He's a winner.
It's crazy.
Now.
Like, and that's it, right? The national media, and like, there's so many examples of it. Don Orlovsky tweeted, we need to be praising Derek Carr more on off the field stuff more. Clap, clap, clap. And he's not the only one, but that's just the one I happen to like just see on Twitter right now, right? Everyone's falling in love with Derek Carr. And there's a couple reasons. One, like the story's great, right? Like everything that he's been through, right? Terrible defenses, multiple head coaches, multiple offensive coordinators, this season specifically for all the reasons we've heard a million times, right? And he's handled it beautifully. Off the field, he could, on the field, he could still play better. Off the field, I don't think he could have handled it any better. Just being true, being the rock, not being emotional. I love you guys. Let's play for each other. The job's not done. No one cares. Like, all these great ideas. Like, and he's living by it. It's not just slogans to say into a mic at a press conference. Like, he's genuinely living it. His team is buying it, right? So, like, the good story, for one, is why people want to get behind him. You want to root for guys like that. But two, and something I've been saying forever, Raiders, quarterbacks are indelibly tied to wins and losses in a way that's unfair. Now, clearly, of the 53 players on a roster, the quarterback has the most effect on wins and losses, right? So they should be weighted heavier on wins and losses. They should get more credit and more blame for wins and losses, clearly. But the way it's just directly tied, Derek Carr has played well, decent, this win streak. He's played way better earlier in the season. He's had way better stretches and hadn't gotten this much love. But because the Raiders are on a 4-game win streak after being 6-7, playoffs on the line, had to win out to get there, primetime game that was absolutely bonkers on Sunday night, everyone's all over Derek Carr. And it's great that he's finally getting attention. But as much as I've been pissed, Soto, at you and a bunch of other people that shit on Carr for the wrong reasons, he's also now getting love kind of also for the wrong reasons. Right? Like, he's not playing better than he ever has, but the team's winning. So he's getting all the credit. And so, because I've always been so obnoxiously loud, Soto, that, hey, you can knock Derek Carr's faults all day long. I'll be right with you. Just make sure you knock correctly, right? Just make sure you say, like, all right, these are the things he's actually doing wrong, and don't blame him 100% for losses or losing players or losing coaches. Like, let's make sure we blame him for what is actually his fault. I, as a very fair, law-abiding man, saying, okay, on the flip side, you can't give him all the credit for the wins either, because the defense has stepped up, Jacobs has stepped up, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Isn't it interesting? One of my five things I said about Derek Carr that you poo-pooed was he's good on press conferences. Like, oh, what is that? What does that even mean? And now he showed it. And now he's reaping the rewards from it.
What I poo-pooed.
Sir, so I let you go on for 10 minutes. May I finish?
I don't know. Putting more words in my mouth.
Continue. That's what you said. That's exactly what you said. You poo-pooed it. But
I poo-pooed that you couldn't find five other better things that he does. Like, you have to go all the way down to presser.
It came into play this year.
Okay.
Yeah, you did.
Continue, Soto, please. Okay. I can't wait to hear what comes out of your mouth next.
Okay, so the reason why he's getting all this credit is because he has been the face of the United Front. Whenever they wanted to talk to somebody about the Raiders, it was Derek Carr and someone else. Derek Carr and the coach, Derek Carr and a player, Derek Carr and the GM. But it was always Derek Carr, and he's always been the one who's been very consistent about the message he's relaying. We're together. We're playing hard. We love each other. We're there for each other. And that's the United Front. And so he's the face now of the Raiders. It's not John Gruden anymore. It's Derek Carr. And it's like I said before, it's almost like the Joe Judge thing, the coach of the Giants that just got fired. He was like big and tough, and we're going to do this. And like, you didn't see it on the field. So it just came across as just like hollow, right?
An act.
Yeah, that's the same thing that kind of like when you saw like when the Raiders went through their tough stretch, it's like, oh yeah, we're not quitting, we're not giving up. It's like, well, dude, you're getting your asses kicked. Like, what the hell's going on here? You're playing like shit against really shitty teams. Like, your words aren't matching your production. Yeah. Now, when the words start matching the production, and you see they're fighting hard, you see they're playing well, you take a little bit now. And also another thing, the reason why he's in the spotlight is there's only what, 14 teams left. So there's not a lot of stories out there, right? There's not a lot of player stories. Like,
and there's really no interesting press conference guys on the Raiders other than like Derek Carr. You know what I'm saying? Like, Hunter Renfrow just gives you the lines. Rich Bisaccia never wants to talk about himself, never wants to like get into the depth. You know what I mean? He's just like, here's like the basics, move on. Derek Carr's the one that like gets emotional, that like drives points home, that goes off on something, right? I still think you use that as, when I said, when for top five things about Derek Carr, you still use that like as a dig, but you just lucked out that it actually panned out that way. But I'm glad you're seeing the light.
If you want to just stick to that, I mean, it just almost like I was seeing into the future, and I said, you know what, this is going to come into play this year.
It wasn't analysis; it was clairvoyance, is what you're saying.
It could have been. I had a lot of mezcal that week. I think I was seeing in the future.
All right, moving on. They released not our schedule, but we know all of our 2022-2023 opponents, home and away. And here they are. Obviously, we play a home and away with the Broncos, Chiefs, and Chargers. At home, and then we're also playing the NFC West and the AFC South, and then three other teams. At home, we've got the Cardinals, Texans, Colts, Patriots, 49ers. On the road, we got the Jaguars, the Rams, the Saints, the Steelers, Titans, and Seahawks. Another rough schedule for the Raiders.
Dude, that's tough, man.
Another conference. The Raiders
not easy.
Just get brutal. Well, one, obviously, the AFC West is one of the best conferences in football. Two, the NFC West is one of the best conferences in football. Who we're playing. And then we went to the playoffs. So, like, the three other random teams that we get are all good, because that's what happens when you know, That's how we do it.
The Colts, the Patriots, and the Steelers, those are the three teams.
We get three tough teams because we're a playoff team now, right? And on top of the NFC West. So,
bro, you know what sucks? The Jaguars are going to be 1 year better because they're going to get Etienne back, the running back that they wanted to have, like the change of pace quicker back.
They have like two top seven picks, don't they? Too.
I think so. And then Trevor Lawrence is going to have another year under his belt. He's going to have better coaching, not that dumpster fire, freaking Urban Meyer. What if Deshaun Watson comes back? What's going to happen in Houston? How much can they be better if they trade for, let's say, a guy, like another guy? Like, dude, this is a fucking murderer's row. The only saving grace that we have is if Garoppolo moves on and Trey Lance takes over with the Niners. It's a better matchup for us. But, dude. I don't know what the fuck's going on in New Orleans. Who's going to have thrown the ball there? Or who's going to have thrown the ball with the Pittsburgh Steelers, for that matter?
There's a lot of at least there's like some variables and some matchups that could be really tough, right? Like, you know, Seahawks fell apart. Is that a one-season thing? Is that going to be consistent? Are they going to make a quarterback change, right? That's up there. The Steelers with Ben Roethlisberger, who's going to be under center for them next year? Who knows?
That's a tough one, yeah.
Like you mentioned, the Saints, who's
Mason Rudolph,
right? Like they could be shitty, right? Jaguars could easily be just as shitty. It's Jacksonville, you know what I mean? Like they can still be crap. Hopefully, Carson Wentz is still an Indy. That would be great for us. Like we've proven we can handle a really good team with bad quarterback play. We've done If you have a bad, if you're a bad quarterback, we can beat you.
Yep.
If the rest of your team's good, like we've got a formula to beat.
Lord, I don't want to go to New England, dude. I just don't want to play them there. They're so tough to play there.
Well, that's a home one. It's home against New England.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
There we go. Well, then. Well, by God.
The only East Coast games we go to, like far east, like a five-hour flight, Jacksonville and Pittsburgh. New Orleans.
And we already made that one this year. Three and a half.
Yeah. New Orleans is like 3.5.
Nashville's like three and a half.
Seattle, luckily, same time zone. We have two LA games. For us living in Long Beach, right? The Chargers and Rams, right? So we got two LA games. Travel wise, this is a pretty good little schedule. Just opponent wise, it could go two ways. Like all those teams that I mentioned, if they don't make the changes they need, like they're the ones with giant question marks. And if they make the right move, they're going to be 10 win teams. If they don't, they're going to be 6 win teams.
Yeah, man.
So it could be, it's that NFC West that I'm really worried about. So Cards, Niners, Rams.
Yeah, man. Look, we need to find a way to continue that trajectory upwards. We kind of got stagnant in 2017, and we were playing a much better schedule. It's just like this year in 2021, 2022 season. In 2016, we had a lot of last-second wins.
Yeah.
So we have to keep the trajectory going upwards, because I cannot handle another fucking 4-12 or 4-13, I guess it would be this time, after a playoff run. And it's going to take it.
That's the other thing, right?
Like, smoke and mirrors.
That's the other thing, is every one of these guys on the schedule, like, there's, I guarantee right now, there's a Jaguars show on YouTube or a Kansas City podcast or a Colts podcast that's doing the same thing we are and talking about us the same way. It's like, oh man, the Raiders, they're a playoff team. They're so good. But what are they going to do at quarterback? They have a bunch of one-year players. Is it sustainable? Like, they're looking at us the same way, right? So as much as, like, we're not such a embedded and, you know, strongly foundationed team where it's all opponents, like, it's still enough where it's like we have to look inward more than outward this offseason, right? Like, obviously opponents matter, but – like, we don't know who our coach or GM is going to be next year, right? Like, it's, that's all still up in the air. So they're looking at us the same way we're looking at them. Variables, question marks. You know, it's fun to look at opponents and go through, like, wins, losses, what's going to happen. But, like, we got to get our beds made before we start worrying about, like, oh, man, who's going to be the quarterback for the Niners next season? It's like, who's going to be our coach? Let's worry about that. But I did go through the entire schedule and go through our wins and losses. Do you want to see it?
Sure.
All right, take a look.
All right, let's take a look at the Raiders' schedule. Win, that's a win. Win, win, also a win. A lot of home wins. Win, 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 win. A bunch of wins. You know what? Let's just make this easier. Win. Raider Nation, baby.
17-0. Easy. I don't know why people stress about that.
I mean, it's possible.
17-0. Not a problem. All right, you ready to do some what up windbags?
Yeah, why not?
Why not? We're here. Titus Flavius.
Hey.
This game won't change anyone's mind on Carr. Talking about the Chargers game. Those who like him will point to the result. Those who don't will point to Herbert's performance. How, when the game was on the line, the Raiders gave the ball to Jacobs while the Chargers gave the ball to Herbert. He makes a good point. Like, when I talked about, we talked about earlier how, like, the national media has changed how they view Derek Carr. Raider fans, I feel like, have dug in so deep, whether they love or hate Derek Carr, that I don't think this win streak is going to affect anyone's mind. Like, that's, it is so, like, people have dug into the trenches on the Carr topic on this fan base. Mm-hmm. It's uncanny.
As much as you want to say that I hate Derek Carr, I don't. I hate his inconsistency. When he plays level like this, this is why I believe Derek Carr gets the game manager moniker. It's because the team is at its best, even when it's in a rough situation, when it's balanced. Like, you know, it's different with Herbert. Herbert's just a different animal out. He's going to be one of the best quarterbacks. If he's not already, he's going to be one of the best quarterbacks in the league soon. Just wait for it. That's why he's getting the ball. That's why the ball's in his hands at these moments. Carr has been shown that he can do that. But if we want to win consistently and beat good teams, he can't be the 400-yard passer guy. That just can't be it for him. He's just prone to too many mistakes. And, you know, it doesn't change my opinion of him, because I'm so hard on Derek Carr because I know what he can do. He's just not consistently doing it. That's the better answer to my question.
You don't hate him. You just want to burn down his house and salt.
I don't want to do that.
Zeus Soria.
You always use that. Is he a farmer? I don't understand that last part.
I mean, he's from Bakersfield. A lot of farming out in Bakersfield.
That's true.
Farm town. Jesus Soria, I love the energy, my guys. I'm in Vegas. I wasn't at the game itself. I walked the strip after the game. No energy, tons of fans, no Raiders being yelled proudly. Found myself being the one of few yelling Raiders and talking shit. Raider football next week. Let's go, baby. So I've been curious. Like, I know a lot of people, like a lot of radio hosts and stuff, Las Vegas based, and we just haven't gotten the schedules down to get them out here, get them on the show, but we will. I promise we will soon. I feel like the Raiders in Las Vegas are like the Kings hockey team in LA. People like talk like LA is not a hockey town. You guys don't care. There's, you know, of all the things to do in LA, going to a Kings game is number like 123 on the list, right? And that may be true. But this is the problem. Because LA is so big, the diehard Kings fan base is huge. Like Staples Center or Crypto.com Arena, whatever it is now, like they sell out games. Like they do good ticket sales. And when the Kings are playing well, you see the flags on cars and all that kind of stuff, right? Like there is a strong fan base here. It's just low on the list of things to do. I think it's the same thing with Las Vegas. There's a million things to do in Las Vegas. Great eating town, the casinos, nightlife, outdoor life. Like Vegas gets a bad rap as just the strip. There's a lot of, it's a cool town to be in. And so it's like, yeah, like there's a diehard fan base, but it's not the beating heart of the city like it is in some other NFL cities, which look, they had a, you know, they were 500 record last season. They were super inconsistent this season. Now they're taking off. Like, and remember, they're used to the Golden Knights, like went to the Stanley Cup in their very first season. They're like, oh, what's losing sound like? I have no clue, right? So I feel like Vegas, I don't feel like Vegas is like just poo-poos the Raiders. I just think it's a small, hardcore fan base, and it's not the heart and soul of the city. And it's going to take some winning for that to happen.
Yeah, I think my take on that is I think the NFL does a much better job of getting its product out there than the NHL does. So it's a much more popular sport anyway. So I think that the fan base in Las Vegas has been conditioned to just like football, not a specific team. So there's not really that kind of connection yet. So that's kind of my deal with that.
Last one, Dutchmaster 710. Successful season, enjoyed it all the way through with the windbags. Well, thank you, Dutchmaster. Appreciate it. But they got me thinking.
Oh boy.
Do you consider this a successful season? Let's say it ends Saturday. Would you say this is a successful season?
If we get blown out, no. No. I want us to show that we belong in the playoffs, not that we... I don't want a repeat of the 2017 season after the 2016 season. I don't want us to lay an egg in the playoffs and then have that carry over into the following year where we're like, oh, you see? It was all those last second, those six last score wins that we had. Like the fumbles we had earlier this year, they're going to even themselves out soon. We weren't that good. It was smoke and mirrors, XYZ, yeah. Whatever you want to say.
Well, I mean, that was no Derek Carr. Kind of, it's hard to gauge, you know, that team without.
Well, we had them at 17.
Oh yeah, no. I was thinking the playoff game, but yeah, I'm with you. So like, yeah, it's I do because my biggest thing is trending in the right direction. That's why I'm so high on Andre James. He started out shit, but he got so much better with experience, and it's heading in the right direction. Leatherwood started off terrible.
God damn.
Improving. He's improving every game.
He
had a really good game on Sunday night, right? Raiders, 4-12, 7-9, 8-8, 10-7 playoffs. We're going in the right direction, right? And this was a big step. Like going to the playoffs out of the AFC West, no small feat. We had to literally, like, the Chargers should be in the playoffs. That is a National Football League playoff team. They're not there because of us, because the Raiders beat them and kicked them out. Big statement, right? That's a really big deal. And we're 3-3 against playoff teams. Like, this was a really, really big step for the Raiders, right? With everything that went wrong with us. So that's why I thought when Dutchmaster 710 said successful season, like, the season's not over yet. Like, it's kind of feels like it's just getting started. It's like, well, yeah. Let's take a giant step back and say, yes, I'm not done. I want more. But I can't look at this season and say it was unsuccessful. We didn't do this. This was a bad season. No, it was a successful season that's not yet done.
Yeah, my big thing is, are we contenders or are we pretenders? The reason why there's so many so much turnover in the NFL as playoffs from year to year is because of these 3, 4, 5, 6 teams that are in the playoff hunt, and the ball goes one way or the other. You get those guys that are like, okay, yeah, this team made the playoffs, but once they got into the playoffs, okay, you could tell they weren't really supposed to be there. They're one of the pretenders. Next year, like I said about Miami, like I pointed to that Miami team. I said, dude, that team's going to take a step back this year because X, Y, Z, all these things were falling into place. Now, they went on a 7-game winning streak. Yeah, but those teams that they beat were all like last or second to last place teams.
Yeah.
So what are we going to be? Are we going to be those perennial contenders for the playoffs, or did we just are we that team that had six last play wins? You take three of those away, half and half, right? And we're a 7-win team and not a 10-win team. So that's my take on that. I want the game win, lose, or whatever. I want us to go out there and play a hard game to not embarrass ourselves, to show that we're contenders in the playoffs, not just we just kind of played our best ball at the end and got in, but we really weren't supposed to be there.
I just want to win. I want it. And I feel like the more I look at this matchup, the more I like it. We got to wrap up. We're already done over an hour. So we will do our full breakdown, Raiders Bengals. Maybe Friday evening we'll do it. A live show, a little breakdown. Saturday. Saturday afternoon. You got what about Friday, like midday? Friday midday?
I could do a lunchtime one.
We'll figure it out. We'll do a full breakdown.
I'm already not going Saturday to the fights. Right? Like I gotta go one or the other. It's like just my freaking gym that I manage and I run. Like I gotta be there.
No big deal. We need you more than they do. All right, so we'll see you. We'll see you for a full breakdown right here on YouTube. But until then, knock on wood if you're with me. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Autumn Windbags. We really appreciate it. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and comment to everything. And also check out our YouTube channel as well. We'll do a special breakdown just on YouTube of Raiders versus Bengals coming up later this week. Until next time, later.